Big on you. Member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
And we now have with us Kansas State Assistant Professor of Political Science, Dr. Nate Burkhead. We appreciate him being here. It's hard to even know where to begin. There's so much going on in the world today. I know you gave us some perspective on some of the things that are going on, and from kind of a political science perspective, I guess you could say. Niger, we're hearing so much about what happened there, and maybe just some perspective, Nate.
Absolutely, yeah. So the important sort of thing to keep in mind is that when we're talking about military the control of the military by the government, there's kind of two people who are in charge, right? The Congress is in charge because they raise and support the army according to the Constitution, and they're the ones who declare war. The president has the commander-in-chief powers, and so he's the one who directs the Department of Defense to sort of go about its missions. What we're finding out with Niger is how little we know, actually, about Niger. We don't really know very much about why these Green Berets were in this part of Niger. We don't really know very much about why they went on their mission. We don't know very much about what happened on that mission that led them to get into trouble, and why it took an hour for air support to come support them, why that air support had to come from France instead of from America. There's a whole lot of things that we don't know about that. But what's really, as citizens, that can be okay, because we have to assume that people at the higher levels know something. The problem right now is that it turns out that Congress doesn't really know what's going on either. When people like John McCain, who's on the Senate Armed Services Committee, people like Lindsey Graham, who's on the Senate Armed Services Committee, when they don't know what's going on, when they're not clued in either, that's problematic. And this is not the sort of thing that we can attribute to President Trump. This is something that is a longstanding conflict between the president and Congress, that the president just has the authority to send troops around and with consultation with the Pentagon, and Congress is on the outside looking in. From a constitutional perspective, that's not how it should be. From a constitutional perspective, Congress should be in the room as well. But we've seen just in repeated presidential administrations that the president has this authority, and Congress is always kind of on the outside looking in, trying to get access. Right now, John McCain is looking to get more answers. He's filing subpoenas to try to get more answers. But he's kind of alone right now. There's not a lot of people that are really willing to step up and kind of challenge to sort of see what to find out what we need to know.
You know, I appreciate your historical perspective, too, because I think we're so focused right now. And let's face it, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, have questions about what's been going on there. But as you said, really through history, the president has that role, has that power.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a longstanding conflict between Congress and the president. It really took off after World War II, though, when we had a large standing army. We had a large standing army on hand in the Cold War to sort of worry about any sort of Soviet incursions or something else like that. And once we had a large standing army and the president has the commander-in-chief powers, then we saw that really escalate and really kind of ramp up.
Well, let's face it, the more people that know the action you're taking, you inhibit missions more often than not. And I wish I could remember the name of the general that did this. He actually told the media a whole different story of what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And maybe you remember who that would be. But I know there was a story that he told the media one story, then went and did something else so that the enemy wouldn't know what he was really doing. Because the more people that do find out what you're doing, the more difficult it can be.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's a really difficult situation that they don't pay me to solve that problem. but it comes down to fundamentally a question of who's in control, and why is it that the president is in control and the Congress is not? This is a longstanding historical source of conflict between Congress and the president. We go back to Vietnam and the War Powers Resolution that Congress passed over Nixon's veto. As other sort of aspects of this, but it does come back to the answer of sort of this is not something unique to President Trump and to the current political time. This is a longstanding source of conflict.
And of course, being a military community, which we basically are,
of course,
there's a lot of interest in this right now.
Oh, I mean, it's hugely important. I mean, the circumstances around this are, and sort of the lack of information, the uncertainty around all of this stuff, have a whole lot of elements that are very similar to Benghazi and several years ago, with just so much question of, is there bad intelligence? Why was help so late in coming? These things are hugely consequential.
Well, I know another subject, too, that we are is making the national news is all this talk about tax cuts and what they need to do and really pushing through. It reminds me, of course, they tried to – the health insurance was one matter that finally got put aside. But the tax cuts now seem to be the focus, and perhaps there's a reason for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing to remember is that we've had almost a 9 months in now? And we don't have any sort of major legislative accomplishments that the president can take credit for that Congress can deliver. When you have – a majority in the Senate, a majority in the House, and the White House, all controlled by the same party, voters typically expect you to deliver something. Now, sometimes we can actually talk for a minute about sort of maybe why voters' expectations are unreasonable, but we'll set that aside for now. But the bottom line is that Republicans are under a huge amount of pressure right now to deliver something. They're unable to deliver on repealing and replacing Obamacare as their campaign pledge was, and so now they really have to. They feel really a huge amount of pressure to deliver these tax cuts. The important thing to remember, though, about these tax cuts is that while cutting taxes is popular, people like getting sort of having their tax burden lowered, and you can point to tax cuts helping businesses save money, businesses reinvest, all of those things. Those are all great things. So cutting taxes is popular. The problem is that when you cut the taxes, you have to balance the budget somehow. You have to either you are going to cut taxes and add to the deficit, which, as we've heard before, is very unpopular. People like Bob Corker said they're not going to support anything that adds a dime to the deficit. And so if you're not going to cut taxes and add to the deficit, then you have to cut taxes, but then you also have to find some other way of making up that money that you're not taking in as a government. And so that might be cutting money that you can save on your 401ks to kind of ratchet that down, or alternatively restructuring the tax code in some way to cut out deductions, maybe state and local tax deductions for your national federal taxes. But that's unpopular, right? Cutting taxes is easy. That's fun. That's just giving out candy on Halloween. the other aspects of sort of paying for them or either just adding to the deficit, that's where the higher stakes come in. And then that's where we come back to the same problem that we saw with repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, which was that you've only got the Republicans only have 52 votes, and they can only afford to lose 3. If they do something that makes it more conservative to bring people like Rand Paul on or Bob Corker on, then they're probably going to lose people who are like Lisa Murkowski or Susan Collins or Dean Heller and Jeff Flake, all of those types who are kind of on the other side of the spectrum. And so you only have so much wiggle room, and so they really have to thread a needle here.
And there's a lot of tension, as you mentioned. I know one of the headlines today from Associated Press, tweets and counter-tweets flying between Republican Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee and President Donald Trump. Corker went on NBC's Today and said Trump's White House should let Congress decide how to pay for his tax cuts. So there's this battle going on. I don't know. It used to be maybe in the olden days seemed like compromise was something that was perhaps done a little bit more, but they're finding it difficult apparently right now.
This is compromise is how deals get done in Congress, and compromise is the sort of thing that we as voters want to penalize our legislators for. It's one of those very weird sort of situations where when somebody is compromising, then they're giving up their values, right? We sent you to Congress to stand up for Kansas's values, and here you are compromising, right? And so for a voter's perspective, this is just wrong, right? We sent you here to not compromise. But nonetheless, every other member of Congress, every other senator has that same mandate from their same constituents. And if everybody sticks to their guns and nobody compromises, then we get no deals. We get gridlock, and we get, you know, 9 months of Congress where the most exciting thing that's come out of Congress is the VA choice bill with Senator Moran worked on. That's great, but we need more. And this is what a lot of voters are going to say. And so we have this push-pull where everybody says, look, we need to have something done, but the constituents, the voters, and particularly the primary voters, are not willing to support somebody who's compromising.
Why don't we go ahead and take a break? It is now 9:45, and again, we have with us Dr. Nate Burkhead, and Kansas State Assistant Professor of Political Science, 537-1350, if you'd like to join in on the discussion today. You're listening to In Focus.